Tune to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Dear listeners, loving Sairams and greetings to all of you from Prashanthi Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the entire universe. And a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, again, the spiritual abode of the universe. I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai, and the time right now in our studio is 11 a.m. Today is 21st of April. Well, this is the month of April, and the months of April and May are the months of summer, summer months in Prashanthi Nilayam. So the temperature is quite high. It's a hot day, but a pleasant and, as always, a divine day here at the ashram. After this segment, Morning Glory, now it's time for Professor G. Venkatraman's musings. But before that, as always, I'll ask a question for all of you. Please answer the question. Give me the correct answer to my email ID, raghu@radiosai.org. Well, today's question is based on the Sri Sathya Sai International Center for Sports, or the Sri Sathya Sai Indoor Stadium at Prashanthi Nilayam. Well, let me, before asking the question, share with all of you a few interesting facts about it. The stadium, measuring 100 meters by 60 meters on a 4.8-acre site, is amongst the largest open-frame space domes in the country, built to Olympic standards, state-of-the-art Olympic standards. And it has got one basketball court, four badminton courts, six table tennis courts, one volleyball court, two squash courts, and a gymnastic stadium, a multi-gym. Well, it also has got 400 meters athletics track with four lanes, two tennis courts, an aerobics hall, and a yoga center. And few of the milestones of the indoor stadium was that it had witnessed two international matches. One was volleyball match, another was basketball match between teams India and Sri Lanka. Another interesting fact about the Indoor Stadium is, on the day of the inauguration of Indoor Stadium, the Harlem Globetrotters, which is an exhibition basketball team, which actually goes all around the world showing the different moves of basketball, had come here to Prashanthi Nilayam during the inauguration of Indoor Stadium, and they had performed. So on that day, one of the players of this Harlem Globetrotters said that about 15 years ago, once he had met Swami, and that day when he met Swami 15 years ago, Swami had told him that you will come to Puttaparthi and you will get a chance to play in my stadium. Well, 15 years ago there was no stadium. Puttaparthi was a small village. Nobody dreamt of even a stadium. And this was the divine plan. Okay, so today's question is, when was the Sri Sathya Sai International Center for Sports, or Sri Sathya Sai Indoor Stadium, inaugurated? Yes, this is the question. Please give me the date of the inauguration of Sri Sathya Sai International Center for Sports, also known as Sri Sathya Sai Indoor Stadium at Prashanthi Nilayam. Please give me the right answer. Send it to my email ID, raghu@radiosai.org, R-A-G-H-U, raghu@radiosai.org. And let's now listen to Venkatraman's talk, and on the other end of the talk, I'll be back again, and at that time, I will read out the names of the listeners who have given me the right answer. So let's now listen to Sir's talk.
Loving Sai Ram, and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. Sri Sathya Sai Aradhana Day. Inevitably, my thoughts go back to the same date, but 3 years ago, as must be the case with most of you dear listeners. It was around 7:30 in the morning of April 2011 when I received a phone call from a good friend of mine who was in the hospital. In a frantic voice, this friend of mine kept on whispering, "Sonny's condition is very serious, very serious." He then abruptly cut off the call. Frankly, this was a news I was not expecting, and there's a reason why, which I shall come to shortly. But to get on with the events of the morning, around 7:50 a.m., I got a call, once again from the hospital. This time, it was Mr. Giri on the line, who gravely said, "Sairam sir, I am very sorry to inform you that our beloved Swami passed away a couple of minutes ago. Mr. Chakravarti is standing next to me and he wants to say something." Next moment, Mr. Chakravarti came on the line and said, "Doc," that was how he always addressed me. He said, "Doc, please prepare an obituary note." I asked in what style should it be. Since he did not seem to be prepared for that question, I cut in and said, "Do you want it done like what appears, say, in, say, the Times of London?" "Yes," Mr. Chakravarti came back and added, "it could be around 300 words. We want to release it to the press." And then he stopped. Immediately, I got to work. The body worked like a machine, while the mind was elsewhere, pretending that what had just happened was all a dream. In any case, I was sort of too numb to feel any ache. Inevitably, my mind went to the events of the previous evening. As was our daily routine, Professor Pandit and I went straight to Dr. Safai's office. For those of you who do not know, Professor Vishwanath Pandit is a distinguished economist, one who has taught in Swami's Institute since 1985 and has also served as the 9th Vice Chancellor. Going back to what I was saying, Dr. Safai was the director of the hospital, a post he was holding from before the inauguration of the hospital on 22nd November 1991. Like Professor Pandit, Dr. Safai was also originally from Kashmir, and they were old friends. At the time we went, Dr. Safai was finalizing the daily medical bulletin for release to the press. Every day before we left, Dr. Safai would invariably give me a copy of that day's medical bulletin on Swami for use by Radio Sai. In between, the discussion would always be about Swami's health and his condition at that particular time. I remember that about 2 days or so after he was admitted, Swami required the insertion of what is called a balloon pump, which made the heart's job of pumping blood a lot easier. It was about 7 p.m. that day, and an hour earlier, that is to say around 5:30 or 6, two doctors who had specially flown in from Bangalore by helicopter left, their job done. Thanks to Dr. Safai, both Professor Pandit and I were able to catch a quick glimpse of Swami as he was wheeled in on a movable special bed to the special ICU meant for him. Dr. Safai went along inside with Swami and the doctors, while Professor Pandit and I sat on the chairs placed outside for folks like us. After some time, someone offered us tea, which we gratefully accepted. Just then, Dr. Safai came out and said, "Where did you fellows get tea from? How about some tea for me?" I smiled and replied, "Dr. Saab," this is an Indian way of saying respected doctor, "Dr. Saab, this is your hospital and you are asking us to find some tea for you?" Dr. Safai laughed, even as someone offered him a cup of tea. I then said to Dr. Safai, "Dr. Saab, You may remember that a high-power committee is scheduled to visit the hospital for discussions with you and some of the scientists of Swami's Institute regarding a medical instrumentation project. That visit is due on April 6th, which is not far away. Given that Swami is in the hospital, maybe we should ask the committee to postpone its visit for some time. What do you say? Looking very confident, Dr. Safiya replied, "Don't worry, Swami would be fine, and in fact, I shall host a lunch for the committee." Sadly, that was not to be, since Swami's health refused to get better. On the other hand, it went into a slow decline due to multi-organ failure. About 15 days or so after admission, when I was in Dr. Safiya's office, along with Professor Pandit, of course, I asked, "Dr. Saab, this multi-organ failure, for how many days does it last?" Before Dr. Safiya could answer, someone else who was in the room butted in to say, "I will answer that question, for I happen to know of something about multi-organ failure. It happened to my daughter-in-law, and it just took 5 days. I then said, "It looks like Swami is deliberately stretching this out to test us. In the end, I am sure he would bounce back, leaving us all stunned." I am mentioning all this because I want to get back to the evening before Mahasamadhi, that is to say the evening of April 23, 2011. Soon after we entered the director's room and asked the regular question, "How is Swami today?" Dr. Safiya responded, "You know, something very interesting happened this morning. As usual, I visited Swami in the ICU, talked to the boys and doctors attending on him, and then went on my regular rounds. Around 1 p.m., I was back in my office and was getting ready to go home for lunch. Just then, I received a call to come immediately to the ICU. I was scared, and I rushed back to the ICU. Guess what? Swami was wide awake and whispering words. He looked at me, recognized me, and nodded. I was so happy. When I heard this, I was happy too, and said in response, 'You know what, Dr. Saab? Swami is going to get well in a few days after throwing a huge scare into all of us.' He would then look at us squarely and mockingly ask, 'Did you fellows imagine I would go away without straightening all of you?' I honestly believed what I said, because despite all the worldly signals, the idea that Swami could leave us was just not acceptable. Damn the signals, my mind kept telling me. You know Swami can do anything. He can change day into night and night into day and so on. Thus, when on the morning of April 24th, the phone call came from Mr. Giri telling me that Swami had left us, frankly, it was a call I was not ready to receive, though the medical reports of the last few days earlier were all pointing that way. I can't quite remember how I went through the next 3 days. Of two things, though, I'm quite sure. The first was that suddenly Radio Sai was landed with the biggest media job of its history. Of course, the public media, which till the previous day was covering the story of Swami's hospitalization, largely from the point of making hay by broadcasting a lot of negative propaganda, suddenly this public media found that Puttaparthi had now become the center of the world as far as hot news was concerned. There were OB or outdoor broadcast fans everywhere. Pool cameras organized by the state had to be positioned inside the Sai Kulwant Hall, and we had to give live feeds from those cameras to the entire world, even as both devotees and VIPs filed past the body. They came from everywhere, the VVIPs and the VIPs, and the ordinary folks as well. The township was crowded, and some of our boys went to cover those events for history, especially because the outside media was least bothered about the people from whom Swami came. As I speak, all those scenes are going past my mind's eye like a blur. But one thing was sure, Busy though all of us were, deep inside every one of us was a heavy heart sunk in an ocean of personal grief to which we could not give expression because the work had to go on. And then finally came the last morning, that is, when the physical remains had to be interned. The proceedings had its own momentum, and the minute-by-minute program relentlessly maintained its tempo with a strong national as well as a multi-faith flavor added to it. I sat through it all quite dazed. One side of me was ever alert to practical matters, and another side of me was withdrawn into a different world with only Swami and me, and a deep ache within me about the loss of the physical form. I suppose that must have been the case with many in the hall, as also the wide world over. The question that kept coming up again and again was, how on earth am I going to cope up with this powerful and compelling termination of physical contact with Swami, to whom one could turn any time one had a problem? Even as I was grappling with my own sense of loss, someone tapped me on the back and pulled me to reality by whispering into my ears, "They're looking for a Bible. Do you know where you can lay your hands on one?" For a moment I was startled, but quickly getting hold of myself replied, "There's a Bible in the bookshelf of my office. You can find a copy there." And then, being my ever practical self, quickly added, "Use the Bible, but please remember to put it back." Finally came the moment when the physical form was actually lowered into the pit, and starting with the VVVIPs, people were escorted one by one to a place near the pit so that they could sprinkle a handful of vibhuti into it. Some kind souls escorted me to the spot, and while I did my bit, my mind was telling me, "Remember the number of times he gave you vibhuti? Now you are offering vibhuti to him, just this one time. Remember this moment and reflect on what it means to you." It was about noon, and people began to leave slowly, one by one. And as we also did so, there were announcements informing us that the daily routine would return to its normal schedule that evening with Vedam chanting and bhajan singing. Evening came, and the crowd had considerably thinned compared to what it was before in the morning. They were mostly the usual people, all of them claiming their traditional seating, a privilege that had been summarily suspended from April 24th until internment. When Swami physically gave darshan, I avoided the veranda, lower veranda that is, although protocol-wise I was entitled to a prime seat in the front row. But thanks to the VIP rush, it required some assertiveness to demand and retain the seat. I intensely disliked the idea of having to claim my seat every day with some litigant or the other, and preferred instead to sit in my old place, i.e. on the upper veranda, close to the main entrance to the mandir proper. There were just a handful of us who preferred to sit in our old place, and this included Mr. Chakravarti. On this day of so-called return to normalcy, when Swami would commence his Samadhi Darshan, I went down to the veranda and with anguish saw a mound of flowers where Swami would normally sit or speak from. So many thoughts came rushing back, stifling them as also the tears welling in my eyes. I returned to my usual haunt to sit through Vedam chanting and bhajans. This went on for some days, till one day the entire veranda area was shuttered up and closed for the construction of the Samadhi proper. On Guru Purnima day 2011, the Samadhi, as we now have it, was open to the public, and the daily as well as the special routines went back to the format of the days when Swami would physically sit in the lower veranda. Some things have changed in the post-Samadhi era, necessarily so, while others have not, for obvious reasons. So, how easy or rough was the transition to the post-physical form era? In other words, how did Prashanthi Nilayam, meaning really the central trust, make the transition from pre-samadhi to post-samadhi era? And what has it been doing since then to keep the flag flying, shall I say? I think as I reminisce, a few words on this subject are needed. To start with, all of us hoped and prayed that Swami would stop with just giving us a terrific scare and not leave us. But that was not to be. As Swami himself has declared many times, God does not consult anyone about when and where he would incarnate, nor does he make known widely whom he would choose as his bodily parents, the time of incarnation, etc. Swami also made it very clear that the same freedom is available to him as to when he would bring the curtain down. That being said, it is clear that Swami's withdrawal, actual withdrawal that is, did not come as a surprise. From the daily bulletins which are becoming increasingly ominous, it was quite clear that the end was nearing. But when the withdrawal actually happened, there was a widespread sense of deep shock, for it hit all of us very deeply. We realize for the first time that none of us, no matter how much we wanted, could now run to Swami for advice if we needed it. Furthermore, the Mahasamadhi meant that overnight, the world would be focused on Puttaparthi and Prashanthi Nilayam for the next several days. And whatever people may say, it indeed has turned out to be that way. The world did focus on us. Going back to the Mahasamadhi event, handling the large crowds and preserving order was a huge task in itself. Then there was the media, the global media as it turned out. Add to that the additional burden of VIPs and VVVVIPs of all genres, and the Prime Minister himself showing up suddenly. I must say, by Swami's grace, things went off smoothly. You know something? When the then Prime Minister, Dr. Manmohan Singh and Sonia Gandhi, came to offer their respects, they both sat on the ground, just like all of us did. Only for a moment they sat on a chair, and that was to sign the condolence book. That's all. After the Mahasamadhi event was over, it was now the turn of the local media to have its day by trying to confront the central trust members. The members of the trust were most patient. They addressed several press conferences. I know, because it is our boys who taped all of them. And finally, that buzz died down. Sections of the foreign press that lectured endlessly on accuracy, objectivity, freedom from bias, etc., etc., they too had their say, with some being crudely brash and harsh in their obituary notices, while others tried to act fair, meaning that they gave equal prominence to Swami and to those who were against him. This is how the media does a balancing act when it wants to. Many years ago, I had here in Prashanthi a long conversation with a Canadian documentary producer who was genuinely interested in making a nice documentary on Swami. I asked this man, "In your documentary, would you give time for those who expressed negative views on Swami?" His reply was, "I don't wish to, but our media code requires me to." I countered, "Suppose you did a film on Jesus Christ, would you sort of be try to show both sides in that case?" His answer surprised me and he said, "I would have to give time now to anti-Jesus views also. That is the way the world is presently. All I can control is the ratio. My worst ratio would have to be a 60-40. And the best I can do is 90-10. That is to say, 10% of the time would be given to the negative side." It so happened that some years later, many produced documentaries that were 100% against Swami. It seemed as if the so-called reasonable fairness had now given way to total unfairness and got away with it. It took me some time, in fact some years, to understand that negative actors are a part of the divine drama. In fact, I heard Swami say that it is negative actors who enable devotees to appreciate His glory better. I am mentioning all this because there was a lot of nonsense written and said at the Mahasamadhi time. Mercifully, the relentless flow of time has since swept all that muck away. In the years that have followed, the trustees, most of whom also happen to be permanent residents of the ashram, have made three major contributions. Firstly, they have managed to stabilize the functioning of the ashram in a new post-Mahasamadhi era. Secondly, they have started improving some of the facilities and conveniences. For example, the roads, though far from perfect, are in a much better shape than before. There are also many signboards which we lacked even at Mahasamadhi time. And more than anything else, the place is a lot greener. I know this because I go for a walk every night. I completely agree that a lot remains to be done. But then, be assured that from now on, the pace of improvement would gather pace. And if I may blow our own trumpet, namely that of Radio Sai, I can say that it has leapfrogged enormously, especially on the video front. All of a sudden, the demand for our expertise has skyrocketed. Just to give an example, recently, on one particular day, our boys had to cover three functions, namely one here in Sai Kulwant Hall, I think it was some kind of a Bhakti Yatra. Next, they had to cover the Atirudra Mahayagnam going on in Vrindavan. And thirdly, they had to help with video coverage of a function in the super speciality hospital here. I mean, our boys had to provide coverage for three functions in the same day, in three different locations. That is how much our load has increased. I am not complaining. On the other hand, my point is that there is a new tempo that has started building up, boosted in part by the rapid approach of the 90th birthday. I shall arrange for a companion article to be published on our website, where we shall not only give full details of what Radio Sai has been doing in the post-Mahasamadhi period, but also, and this is important, what we plan to do during the decade to the century, i.e. the 100th birthday, which will come up in 2026. And by the way, I almost forgot to mention the archive. Over the decade, Radio Sai has been quietly collecting audio tapes, photos, handwritten manuscripts, letters, videotapes, films, etc., etc., all related to Swami and His various trips. In fact, a new building is coming up to house all these precious originals, and pictures of the building along with a good write-up would appear as a part of the companion article I promised earlier. The article would also include two satellite pictures of Puttapathi and the ashram area, one taken in 2003, and a more recent picture taken in 2012, and at a higher resolution. By comparing these two, you can see how much greener the ashram has now become during a decade. If you want further proof, well, come here and take a good walk around, and you would know. There are many, many things I would like to say, but presently I do not have time enough for it. Those of you who have tuned in to the special function held this morning would not have missed the inauguration of the reverential presentation of the Sai Pancharatna Kirtanas. This musical offering is being made in the same spirit as the observance of the famous Tyagaraja Aradhana Day, which, by the way, celebrated its 168th anniversary this year. This means that the observance of the Tyagaraja Aradhana goes back all the way to 1847, when the East India Company ruled India, not the British government, when the American Civil War was still a decade or so away, and James Clerk Maxwell was still to write down his famous electromagnetic theory of radiation, thanks to which we now have radio, TV and satellite communication. What I am trying to say is that in the years to come, I do hope that worship of God through reverential music, which has always been a part of a great tradition in this country, Nadopasana as it is known, would live as would the singing of Sai Pancharatna on Sri Satya Sai Aradhana Day. Indeed, in all parts of the world where Carnatic music is popular, if Tyagaraja Aradhana is celebrated in fervor all the way from Cleveland, USA to Melbourne, Australia by the singing of Tyagaraja Pancharatna Kritis, then why not the singing of Sai Pancharatnas also? Think about it. God bless and Jai Sai Ram. Offering this talk at Swami's lotus feet, I bring it to a close. Thank you and Jai Sai Ram.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and once again, greetings and a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live. The live hosting coming directly from Prashanthi Nilayam, Ashram, the spiritual capital of the entire universe. I'm Raghu from Team Radio Sai, and till now you heard to Professor G. Venkatraman's talk. Well, before the talk started, I had asked you all a question. The question was, when was the Sri Satya Sai International Center for Sports, also called the Sri Satya Sai Indoor Stadium in Puttaparthi, inaugurated? Well, I feel it was a bit tough question since I got the correct answer from only one listener as of now. In fact, before telling you the correct answer, let me just tell you all, give you some more time to reply the correct answer. My email ID is raghu@radioside.org, and meanwhile, I will tell you all a few interesting facts about the Indoor Stadium. This stadium is constructed in state-of-art Olympic standard, and it measures about 100 meters by 60 meters on a 4.8-acre site, and it's one of the largest open-frame space domes in the country. And it was constructed in a record time of just 4 months. It's a world record, constructed in just 4 months, such a huge indoor stadium. And it consists one basketball court, four badminton, shared badminton courts, six table tennis courts, one volleyball court, two squash courts, and a gymnastic stadium, a huge gym for the students for exercise. And it has got a 400 meters athletic track with 8 lanes, 2 tennis courts, an aerobics hall, and a yoga center. Wow, isn't it awesome, amazing? And it was constructed, as I said, in a record time of just 4 months. And there's another interesting fact about the stadium through which Swami shows his divine presence. On the day of inauguration, the Harlem Globetrotters basketball team, it's an international team of exhibition basketball. This team goes all around the world showing the different moves of the basketball. They had come to Prashanthi Nilayam on the day of inauguration and they had performed in the Indoor Stadium. And on that day, one of the players of this Harlem Globetrotters told that about 15 years ago, he had met Swami, and Swami had told him that you will one day in future play in my stadium. Well, 15 years before the inauguration of the stadium, what Swami said didn't mean anything because there was no stadium at all, and Puttaparthi was a small village. But whatever Swami said came true 15 years later. And the few milestones of this indoor stadium was that we had witnessed international volleyball and basketball matches between teams India and Sri Lanka. So my question was, when was this stadium inaugurated? And dear listeners, as I was giving you the few of the facts about the indoor stadium, another listener gave me a correct answer, has mailed me the correct answer. So the two listeners today who have mailed me the right answer are Geeta Sundar and Mridula Murthy. Congratulations to both of you. And well, the correct answer is the indoor stadium was inaugurated on 22nd November in the year 2006. And it was on the occasion of Swami's 81st birthday celebration. And it was inaugurated by late Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam. In fact, Dr. Abdul Kalam for that year was also the convocation chief guest, which was held on the same day, and it was the 25th convocation of the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. So the correct answer for my question was that the indoor stadium was inaugurated on 22nd November 2006, and two listeners gave me today the correct answer. They are Geeta Sundar and Mridula Murthy. Well, thank you for participating. And next on today's Thursday Live is the segment Service Love in Action.